Hi, I'm Willie Miller.
Hi, I'm Seth Coe.
I'm Caitlin Mathis.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Agnew.
Hi, it's Grant Hackett here.
Hi, I'm Sharon Stone from the Wallaroo.
I'm Azuma Nelson.
I'm Gashirin, and you're listening to Not the Foolish.
Yes, welcome back to yet another podcast of Not the Footy Show. I'm Ashley Morrison.
And I'm John Lee.
And we've got some great guests coming up in this podcast, but plenty to talk about in the coming week in sport. And the big thing is the Socceroos are back in town. Incredibly, John, they played their first game in 1975, their second game here in Perth in 1995, a wait of 20 years between games. Then it was only a 10-year wait till they played Indonesia in 2005. And of course, now we've had to wait another 10 years for 2015 for another game. Four games in, I think it's over 160, 170, nearly 200 games of Socceroos game, and we've only had four in Western Australia.
Oh, but look at the teams we're getting. We're getting the quality games here, Ashley.
And do you know there's only one man who's actually played from Western Australia who's played in two of those three games?
That would be Stan?
It is indeed, Stan Lazaridis.
Well done.
And can you give a guess on the results?
We won.
You won one, drew one, lost one.
That's three, and this will be the fourth.
This will be the fourth.
Yeah, it's something they should be working on, the FFA. We don't get a fair chop from them when it comes to seeing representative football in WA, that's for sure. At least the rugby union have the decency to bring the Springboks here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we know there's the stadium issue, and that's a whole different issue now because, of course, the government not revealing what it's going to cost and all of that, but we won't go down that
path. Oh, that just gets messier and messier, doesn't it?
It does, but I think we predicted it always was going to be.
What they could have done is put a retractable floor across the Elizabeth Quay, and we could have played there.
Oh, that would have been brilliant. City in the background, you know, fans out on the water in their boats.
With the Sky Show going off in the background.
Now, just before we do wrap up on the football, one thing I have a bit of a concern about, and look, Ange Postecoglou wants to pick his best squad, you understand, but to me, it should always be the squad that is picked on based on performance, not necessarily on reputation, unless you have a player, say, who's coming back from an injury. I have a problem because we have Tommy Orr, who's currently not playing for a club, does not have a contract with anyone, and he's been selected for our national team. To take that a step further, you've got this week Aurelio Vidmar announced his Ollie Roos team, and there are two players in his squad who don't have clubs, one being Ryan Edwards, the other being Brad Smith. Now, I was in this situation many, many years ago when I was playing minor counties cricket and I changed clubs and I didn't really want to play for a club in my town. But I was told by the coach, if you're not playing for a club, we can't pick you. And I think that's fair, to be honest. And I just think certainly at international level, you should be having to have a contract with a club before you're selected for your country.
One thing we do, everybody seems to agree on, is that you can't have one rule for someone else and another rule for another player. So if it was Tim Cahill, he'd get picked. So I think, okay, you know, maybe there's wiggle room there. But the other thing you always hear coming out of the Socceroos from coaches is, I want my players to be playing in the first team, and guys have got to have that expectation. And if they're not playing first team football at the club of their, wherever they're at, they're not going to get a crack with the Socceroos. So how could a guy that hasn't got a club to play in the first team for get selected?
Yeah, I mean, you can't...
Poor, the player in question, I'm not sure who it is, but, you know, I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, but he's not going to be match fit. There's no way, you know, and I just find it, I don't know, I find it baffling, and I feel sorry for other players who play in that position who are playing regularly and have been overlooked.
Yeah, and let's face it, picking a Socceroos team would not be an easy job because of the nature of the guys playing all over the shop and everywhere and, you know, windows where people are available, et cetera, et cetera. But I would have thought there was enough guys out there to have picked people who had a team.
Absolutely. Well, just before we wrap up football, one thing I would like to make listeners aware of as well is this weekend we're going to be live streaming a State League game. It will be the Western Knights against Dianella White Eagles. And you can go to the Not the Footy Show YouTube page, and that game will be broadcast live from just before 3 o'clock on Saturday. It's the first time that a State League game in Western Australia will have been streamed live over the internet. So very excited. I'm doing the commentary of that game, and of course a lot of rivalry between those teams. That's why it's been selected, and I must commend the Western Knights, who've forked out the money. They believe it's something that is worthwhile, and they want to show what can be done and how we can showcase the game of football in this state. And of course also they're going to use it hopefully to raise awareness of their fundraising attempts to get new club rooms down at Nashfield.
Oh, good luck to them, and a great initiative on their behalf. I mean, it's something that perhaps the governing body should have been looking at a long time ago, but you know, clubs have obviously decided to take the bit in the teeth and off they've run.
Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me, hit me. Je t'adore, ich liebe dich. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick.
Now, another event taking place this weekend is the Hockey Roos are taking on South Korea in a 3-test series at the Perth Hockey Stadium. And just to hear, obviously, where the Hockey Roos are at the moment, they've qualified for the Rio Olympic Games, courtesy of the Hockey World League in Antwerp. I caught up with Georgie Parker.
Georgie Parker, welcome to Not the Footy Show.
Hi, how are you?
Well, it's a beautiful day here in Perth. The sun is shining, but you guys never stop training.
No, 6 days a week here at Perth Hockey Stadium. It's nice when the weather's like this, but when it's a bit rainy, it's not as nice, but today's a beautiful day for it.
It is indeed. Now, you've just returned from the World League over in Antwerp, and Australia managed to get third place, which meant you qualified for the Olympics, so it was very much mission accomplished.
Yeah, definitely. We're a bit disappointed with the third place result. We go into every tournament hoping to get a final two, if not the gold. But, you know, we got the job done with the bronze medal and it qualified for Rio, so now the race to Rio begins.
Looking at the tournament, I mean, the group stage, you were going pretty well, and then, of course, New Zealand almost sort of derailed your hopes a little bit.
Yeah, that was our game that sort of put us off for the rest of the tournament. It meant we met Holland in the semi-final as opposed to the final, and Holland for us is a bit of our Achilles heel. We haven't managed to have many good results against them in the last few years. So in the end, though, you need to be able to beat every team to win a tournament. So whether we meet Holland in the semi-final or the final, we still had to beat them to win the tournament, and unfortunately, we met them in the wrong game, so yeah, third place it was.
They came out and hit you hard really, really quickly in that game.
Holland, the number one in the world team for a reason, and we went up to scratch that game. They were really, really on, and we were just slightly off and punished for it.
They also did some celebrations which we haven't seen in women's hockey before, but they also got in trouble from their coach for doing that. How did that make you guys feel, though?
Look, in the end, we had some conversation with the FIH the week leading into that, and I think that they took it a little bit too literally. They wanted us to celebrate the goals, and, you know, they did, and they were having a bit of fun, but, you know, we took it a bit disrespectfully. But in the end, they thumped us 5-1, so I guess in the end, if we don't let them score goals, they can't celebrate like that.
No, I mean, certainly from the TV perspective, it is something I know all the TV stations want you guys to do, is to start celebrating and putting unique celebrations together. But it must be hard when it's something that doesn't come naturally.
Definitely. I mean, we pride ourselves in the fact that we're not soccer. You know, celebrate with your teammates. Don't put on a show about it. Yeah, I mean, we're all in two minds about it. You know, at the time, we're like, oh, didn't want to look at it, but looking back at it now, they were just having a bit of fun, and I don't think they'll do it again. What we didn't like is that they only did it against us, not any other team, and, you know, they scored a lot of goals against all the other teams as well. But yeah, you take it as it is, and, you know, we moved on pretty quickly.
It's funny you say that, but to me that showed how you are a threat to them. I think there was almost a psychological thing that they wanted to rub your noses in it a little bit because you are a threat as a side.
Well, we hope that they think that. We know that we're one of the top teams in the world at hockey, and we're chasing to get better than Holland. They're the pinnacle of our women's sport, and hoping to beat them. They're the team to beat at Rio, and, you know, we're close second. So, yeah, I hope that they do think that we're a threat.
You met New Zealand in the third place playoff. playoff again, a team that had beaten you in the pool games, but it was a very, very different performance the second time around.
Absolutely. We really just stuck it to them. We didn't have a good game against them in the round games, and we got a, you know, fair rocket up after that game, and we had something to prove. And, you know, they thought that they finally made the difference between our two teams, and we wanted to prove to them that, no, they haven't made those grounds, and we're still the better team in the Oceania, and, you know, we're still better than them.
Certainly your record against them is phenomenal. I was amazed. I think they've only won something like 17 games against you in the history of the two nations. Now you've got to play them, obviously, in the Oceania Cup. Is there still something to prove in that?
Definitely. It's ranking points. We don't need to win it for qualification or anything like that, but you never want them to get a sniff at victory against us, because they're a sort of a team that plays their best hockey against us, a bit like in the rugby, and the All Blacks always seem to play their best against the Wallabies. It's the same with in cricket, same with everything. We've got that rivalry that, you know, is stemming back hundreds of years, so we never want to give them a sniff, so we're going to go there, take our best team and still try to get the win.
Coming up is a series against South Korea, who made it to the final and lost with just 2 minutes to go against the Netherlands in the Hockey World League semi-finals. They're a very good team, first team to qualify for the Olympics, and they looked very good.
Yeah, they play a very different game of hockey. They're very defensive, and then do a very, very strong counter-attack with a few really nifty forwards that you need to be careful of. You can't let your guard down just for a moment, because, you know, they will sneak one in behind you. So it'll be a good test for our defenders, and it'll be good for our forwards to play some really against some really strong defenders.
The one thing you mentioned there is very good with their attacking. Park Mi-hyun used to be substituted, but she'd still stand on the halfway, people not realising necessarily that she was on the pitch. And then as a counter-attack broke, she would break forward. And she is certainly a player you've got to watch out for, doing things like that.
Oh, she's an incredible player. We often look at her as forwards. I'm a forward myself, and we often look at her leading. She's probably one of the best in the world, and she's probably one of the most dangerous forwards in the world. So we do look at her very closely, and we don't take her lightly at all.
Obviously, you've got an extended squad here in Perth at the moment. All of the players involved in the high performance program are here for the South Korea series.
Yeah, it's good to have everyone over. Everyone sort of learning the same sort of principles going forward, and really pushing the senior squad players. So we've got 38 all from all around the country, from all different ages. So it's going to be a really good test for all the younger players and for all the older players as well.
Is it a reminder that you may have qualified for the Olympics, but your position is never assured?
Absolutely. There are a few young guns coming through. I know I'm really worried. You know, younger, quicker, faster bodies as opposed to my older, breaking body. But, you know, as long as we're all working hard, all working to the same goal, I think we'll all be at our best, and it'll be a really tough job for the coaches coming into Rio for selecting the team.
You mentioned breaking bodies, and you weren't well, I believe, in Antwerp. You were quite sick and probably shouldn't have played.
No, I was very, very sick with a blood infection, and I missed one game out because I literally couldn't get out of bed. And then the next game, I had a couple of days off, and then the next game I sort of had to play modified minutes, is what the coaches would call it, but I wouldn't call it that. But I had to do my bit for the team and still put my best out there, and it probably wasn't my best, you know, in terms of the whole hockey perspective, but, you know, it was my best in the time, so got through it.
You touched on you'd like more goals. The one thing, if you looked at Australia's performance there, certainly penalty corners was the area you were getting most of your goals. Jodie Kenny was top scorer and scored, 10 goals out of 22.
Yeah, Jodie's on fire. Her drag flicking since Commonwealth Games has been second to none, probably best in the world, I'd say. And us as forwards, we need to be scoring more field goals, but at the same time, if you've got a corner battery like you do, if I'm getting three corners a game and one of them or two of them are going in, then I'm doing my job as well. What we need to do is be getting our field goals and penalty corner goals firing all at the same time. At the moment, we're sort of doing one or the other. So going into Rio, that's going to be a real focus for us, and, you know, the coaches are going to pick a forward that can score goals, so that's going to be our aim going forward.
To people who don't watch hockey, I mean, what is going through your mind when you run into the circle? Is it a case of, can I get it on a foot, or if the chance to score is there, you'll take that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, you have to weigh up the situations. A lot of decision making in hockey. It's such a high speed game. As you know, we've got a second to make a decision, and, you know, you take the shot if you can, but at the same time, sometimes going for the corner is the better option, especially when there's three in front of you and no one else except for you in the circle. So, and like I said, when you've got Anna Flanagan and Jody Schultz on the, or Kenny on the battery, then a corner's just as good as a goal for us.
South Korean series is going to be exciting, but you don't get any break. It's straight into then the Australian Hockey League.
Yeah, so we've got a camp coming up. We've got four games coming up before the Korean series, just intra-squad and some games against Korea, just some friendlies. And then the three test series, then a week, I think, before we go home to prepare for AHL. And you play, six or seven games there. So it's just constant for us going into Rio. We're going to be so game ready, which is a good thing. Training blocks are good, but that's what we play. What we train for is to play. So it's going to be fun, and it'll be exciting, and it'll be just a good challenge for us.
Do you love going back and playing for South Australia?
Yeah, I do. You get a real thrill. That's where you started from under 12, so it's nice to go back and wear the red, blue and yellow and go back to your childhood coaches. And yeah, it's really good fun.
What's it like coming up against people that have grown to be your friends, who you've probably lived with in every day of your life lately?
Yeah, it's quite funny. We do it at club hockey here as well, and it's funny because you sort of forget that how annoying some people can be on the field, because they're always on your team and you always finish your game going, oh, jeepers, I can't believe that person's so whingy and whiny to the umpires. But, you know, it's good fun, and at the end of the game you just shake each other's hands, have a laugh and get on with it.
Sure, you're not one of those players?
Oh, I think I am one of those players, so but that's all right.
Well, good to catch up with Georgie. All the best in the Australian Hockey League and, of course, in the series against South Korea.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Olympian Adrian D'Souza from India, and you are listening to Not the Footy Show.
And that was Georgie Parker, and those games are taking place on the 7th, the 6th and the 8th. And they're going to be a real test for the Hockey Roos, John, because I was really impressed with South Korea in the tournament at the Hockey World League.
Yeah, it should be a good test for them. I'm not sure how many people are going to turn up to watch, considering it's finals time in the local state hockey, and I'll be telling all of my mates to come along and watch me play in the finals, not go and watch Australia. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is.
So the finals are going to be on the same time as those games? Or?
Well, certainly all of the grass grades finals will have started. The turf finals will be in their first week. Interesting timing. I mean, I know they're not, they might not be responsible for how it turns out. They might have very little they can say or do about it. But, you know, for hockey people, it's not a hard choice, really.
One thing I do find a little bit strange is we heard in that interview with Georgie how the Dutch are one of the teams that they're striving to get on level terms with. And I was amazed to hear that former Dutch international Kim Lammers is going to play for the WA Diamonds in the Australian Hockey League. I wonder why Western Australia need a foreign player, because to me they're always there or thereabouts come the finals of the Australian Hockey League, and I just don't know why we need a former international who's kind of past her best, dare I say, to come and try and help. I think we've got a strong enough team, and it just seems to me a little bit strange to sort of make that choice.
One of the great strengths of Australian hockey is that it's survived from the resources that it has within and has been very successful and using those resources. Can Hockey WA afford to bring in an international player as a guest star? I don't think they can. We're in a situation where host clubs in finals are being asked to provide umpires for those finals because they don't have the money. They don't have the umpires. And
The governing body doesn't have the money to supply umpires for a final series?
I don't think it's basically money, but they're not supplying umpires to the lower grades. So
isn't that their role? I mean, if it's just finals, there can't be all the massive games they have on a normal weekend, so there must be umpires available.
Well, you'd have to talk to Hockey WA about that. Apparently not. And so the clubs who are hosting the finals are being told that they have to supply umpires for the day. Now, in my particular case, our final has been drawn at our home ground. So we're going to have two umpires from my club umpiring our team in the finals. If I was the opposition, I would not be happy about that. I would be very, very pissed off about it.
I would probably walk off if I was playing for the opposition.
I don't want Fremantle people umpiring our finals to avoid all of that sort of stuff. just to not even have it questioned. But, you know, in their wisdom. And the other thing they're doing is they're paying clubs some money to pay these umpires, but not the going rate. They're paying them under the going rate, which I thought is a bit stingy of Hockey WA. Maybe if they weren't importing players from overseas, they could afford to pay clubs the cost of having to supply the umpires that the Hockey Association should be supplying themselves.
I've missed your rants, I really have. Before we wrap up the hockey, congratulations, though, to buoying up youngsters, 16-year-old Kobe Green and 17-year-old Jake Harvey, who are going to make their debuts for the Thundersticks. That's a fantastic effort for them. We wish them all the very best as the Thundersticks embark on their Australian Hockey League. Kyle Brown will be captaining the team, which is good to see, seeing as originally a Queenslander and now an honorary West Australian.
Absolutely. And also a big well done to young Matthew Bird, who's a young Fremantle lad who's been chosen the Australian under-21s team. He's been out practically all season with an injury, so he's missed the Thundersticks this year, but he's selected to play in the under-21s come November. So good luck to Matty.
Yes, you are listening to Not the Footy Show, and our next guest, well, she's had a remarkable season in the Women's National Wheelchair Basketball League. We believe breaking a competition record, scoring over 500 points in the season, which is just unbelievable.
From a wheelchair.
Yeah. And she did really well steering the Western Stars to the final, but also there's some major games coming up for the Australian team, silver medalists at the Paralympic Games in London, and they face the opportunity of maybe not qualifying for Rio. We're now going to catch up with Amber Merritt. Amber Merritt, welcome back to Not the Footy Show.
Thank you, it's a pleasure to be back.
It's been a while since we had a chat, but there's been a lot happening in the wheelchair basketball world.
There has, especially for our women's program in Australia.
Well, let's focus first on the Western Stars, which is the WA team in the Women's National Wheelchair Basketball League. You're a key member in that team, and you nearly didn't have a team in the league this year.
No, this season, unfortunately, we had a few very important players drop out due to either just life or pregnancies, and now, yeah, we faced a really scary time where we almost didn't have a team this season. But we were lucky enough to have a few people jump on board and some new youngsters coming through the ranks, which was great.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few new faces and very young faces as well. Can you tell us a little bit about those players?
Yeah, so we had three very new, very young, fresh girls come through the program. We had Annika Bott, Mary Friday and Tayshia Ovens. All each had a different skill set to bring to our team. Mary came in with a heap of aggression, which is something that's very rare in beginners in this sport, so it was really exciting, and I know she definitely set the tone for youngsters coming through. Annika's just a flamboyant young woman, and she's only 13, 14, I believe, so for her to come up through the ranks, it's going to be very exciting in the future. And Tayshia, she's a bit of fun, she gives us a bit of a laugh, and she keeps everything really light on court, so it's really exciting.
Looking at all of that then, a young team, a team that nearly didn't get on the court, for you guys to... You made the finals, the top four teams, but then you actually managed to get through to the grand final. That was a hell of an achievement.
It was insane. It was something that we never expected. I think in the beginning of this season, with new coaching staff as well, we all agreed that there was no expectations. And I think that was really a big key for us to get into the grand final.
Winning that semi-final game that put you in the grand final, some would say that was your final.
Yeah, it was pretty insane. The game was really tight all the way through, and we've always stayed quite close to Queensland. Unfortunately, in the final quarter, it would blow out previously, but this time through, we managed to keep our pace and stick with them, and then Georgia Inglis with the last bucket of the game was insane and put us into the grand final, which is everything we hoped for in front of a home crowd.
From memory, I think that was the first time you were in the lead in the match, wasn't it?
I think it was the second or third time. I kind of lost track of checking the scoreboard because it was backwards and forwards so often, and I didn't want to feel that pressure. So, yeah, it was crazy.
The Comets certainly couldn't believe they lost that game.
No, no, they couldn't. I think, you know, when it's two very tight teams, like close games like that with two very strong teams, or, yeah, you know, it's, you don't win, like, you don't lose the game. It's both a win for both of us because we know we're getting on there.
The final was always going to be a tough task. The Kilsyth Cobras hadn't lost a game all year.
Yeah.
They had to fight hard to make it into the final, but really, it was those first 5 minutes where you guys just could not land a basket.
No, unfortunately, we couldn't buy a basket to save our lives, unfortunately. But, you know, Kilsyth are a strong team. They've got a lot of really strong national players on their team, and a lot of respect goes out to them, especially that mental barrier as you go into a grand final. Sometimes you find teams who've gone undefeated will believe that it's going to be an easy ride. So I think it was really good for them to maintain their pressure and their style of game to be able to win that.
Were the coaching staff happy at the end of the season? I mean, we know coaches always want to push you guys harder and harder.
Yeah, I believe our coaching staff was really happy and really proud of what we'd achieved. To be honest, I think we all were. We were a team that almost didn't have a team. We were a team that was full of young, fresh minds. And we were a team of people that some needed to step up into leadership roles in something that was completely out of their comfort zones. So I think we achieved a lot more this year than any other year.
You talk about those leadership roles. You're still very young, but you were suddenly one of the senior players in the team. Had an outstanding season, over 500 points. And I'm not sure if anyone's done that before, but it would be a very rare club, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't really keep track of how many points I score in a season. So when it was the first game of the finals round, when that was announced after I made the first bucket for our game, it was I was really shocked. But I try not to let these things faze me because I just need to keep going with what I'm doing. And to be honest, it's terrible of me, but I'm very much a percentages person, that I can shoot heaps of baskets, but if I don't shoot over 50%, I'm not happy.
No, and it is a game of percentages where that's a key factor. If we now move ahead to the Gliders and percentages there, they actually had a camp here in Perth after that, but you've got a bit of an uphill battle because in Canada, a game you should have probably won against Great Britain has now cost this region, Asia, a qualification spot for Rio.
Yeah, unfortunately, we only have one spot to qualify for Rio amongst four teams in where we're going to play in Japan in October. It's a really scary but exciting time for wheelchair basketball here in Australia. Our women's program has been non-stop doing everything we possibly can do to achieve the end goal in Chiba in Japan. So it's exciting. It is exciting.
Is the mood in the camp, that little bit of nervousness, which, as you alluded to there, is the thing that's almost kind of spurring you on?
Yeah, the camp was predominantly all the girls who are going away to Japan. And it was more of a celebration of the hard work that we've put in for this program here in Australia, and to actually celebrate making the team and getting ready for this next phase from August through to October. So we try to just keep it as lighthearted as possible. In the back of our minds, we are all very much aware of the dangers and the costs that could happen if this doesn't go to our plan. But, we're trying to keep it as lighthearted and as happy and fun for ourselves as possible.
Now, teams you're up against there, China's obviously one, Japan is the other, and they'd be probably the highest ranked, aren't they?
They're the two hardest teams that we've got to come up against. China's really unpredictable. They've got a lot of big girls and they can all shoot really well. And their lows, they're predominantly lows and highs, and their lows work really well to pick. And yeah, they're quite speedy, so we have to be aware of that. In Japan, they have some really solid players, especially in Mari Yamamoto. So we just have to keep an eye out for that and hopefully get the job done.
It seems kind of sort of unimaginable that the Olympic silver medalists or Paralympic silver medalists from London may not be there. You've got to get there.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunately these things happen and you can't predict what's going to happen, unfortunately. You've just got to go out there and do the best. You've seen it happen before, unfortunately, with the Canadian men's team after London 2012 when they won a gold medal in London and then didn't qualify for the following World Championship. So it's not unheard of, but it's not ideal either. So we're going to work our hardest to make sure we achieve that spot.
Does it also show, though, how the gap is closing at the top of wheelchair basketball around the world? Now, there's certainly more teams playing it, but also the standard seems to be really going up.
Yeah, wheelchair basketball around worldwide is huge now, and the women, we're playing like men, and that's what we want. We want to be aggressive. We want to be big. We want to be strong. We want to push hard, and that's just going to make this sport bigger, better, stronger, and more entertaining as well, not for just for players, not just for coaches, but for spectators, and hopefully it'll bring more attraction.
I know we've talked about this before, but in the National Wheelchair Basketball League, the girls are allowed to play in the men's teams. It's a mixed team. Do you think that's been really good and that's what's helped the Gliders get to be where they are? Because you immediately are matching yourselves against people that are stronger than you physically?
Yeah. So this season was a massive change up for the Gliders because we entered our first all-women's national team into the men's national league. So the Gliders didn't have their own team, and that was great for us because it meant that we were coming up against strong competition in the men. That is something similar to what we'd get internationally, if not harder. And also just to be able to have that experience to play together while maintaining budget here in Australia.
The guys don't hold back, do they?
No, they don't. They smash us, they smack us. But it's good. It's only going to make us better. And to be honest, it was really evident when we were at the finals to see how close all the teams were and how much better the game was for us.
Certainly was. Well, Amber, good to catch up again. We wish you all the best in Japan and please make sure you qualify.
Awesome, I hope so too.
Hi, I'm Gordon Banks and I'm listening to Not The Footy Show.
So that was Amber Merritt from the Western Stars and also the Australian Gliders. And we do really wish them well, John, when they head up to Japan and they've got to try and beat Japan and China to qualify for Rio. They're going to really rue that defeat against Great Britain because had they won that game, there would have been two spots for Asia. Now there's only one and everything to play for.
Yeah, it's a tough road, isn't it? A real tough road for the girls, but they've got a lot to play for.
They have indeed, and I think they have the ability there. Certainly, they've got some very talented players. And as we heard with the Western Stars, some really young girls getting the opportunity this year with other players leaving the side and moving interstate or having babies, etc. So a great opportunity for some of the youngsters, and let's hope they just go forward and flourish. And
we talked a couple of weeks ago about floorball and how floorball had grown. And the wheelchair sports like wheelchair basketball are very similar in the sense that they needed just a little bit of exposure. They needed something to let people see what they were doing and how they went about it. And it seems to have taken off. Certainly in the general consciousness of people, they're aware and they know that it's going on and that Australia's good at it.
Well, you talk about that, and I want to mention, and we will be talking to someone hopefully from the Enforcers on our next podcast, but the West Coast Enforcers won a silver medal at the Australian National Wheelchair Rugby Championships.
Excellent.
That's the first time they've ever medalled, and there's a lot of people been involved with them for a long time, so fantastic achievement, and congratulations to every single person involved in that program.
And now there is a sport that if you go along and watch and see how they go about it, you have nothing but the highest admiration for them.
Hi, I'm Derek Underwood, and this is the Not The Footy Show.
Well, the National Rugby Championship got underway, and it wasn't an ideal start for the Perth Spirit, who went down to the team that beat them in the final, 18 points to 29 in their opening game. So that was a little bit disappointing. And I don't know if you saw, John, there was a press release came out in the last week about the Waratahs Rugby and the New South Wales Rugby Union, and they announced structural changes. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to have two boards, one to oversee the Waratahs, the other to oversee New South Wales Rugby Union. A group chairman will oversee the running of both boards, and there'll be a single CEO overseeing both organisations. I have to say, when I read that, I thought, oh dear, this does not sound like a workable proposition.
It sounds like what the setup they had 4 or 5 years ago, which they changed, and then they changed again, and now they're changing their setup yet again. New South Wales is supposed to be the poster boy organisation for Australian rugby, and they have been going through these issues for years.
I think as long as I've lived in this country.
Every couple of years, New South Wales Rugby announces how they're going to restructure themselves and this is going to be run by so-and-so and that's going to... And then a couple of years down the track, all the stakeholders start sniping each other and saying, no, no, we don't like that anymore. So they change it back to how it was 10 years previously. And then 5 years later, they move it forward to what it was 8 years before. It's just crazy.
Look, I don't know. I mean, I'm critical of the franchise model of the A-League. I don't think that was the best model. I don't think we have the population. I don't think the travel in this country, I think that was prohibitive to it being a success as well. That's one issue. But I think with rugby as well, I like the way that it's involved with the state bodies. However, I think it has to be one board overseeing that. By all means, have it as a separate business within that whole umbrella. But to have two boards and one CEO and one chairman overseeing both of those boards or being involved with both of those boards, I think that's a very cumbersome way to run things.
Well, if you got the NRL board together with the ARU board and got them to discuss what was best for the future of rugby, you're going to get two completely different points of view. And you're going to get two completely different points of view when you've got separate boards like that about what, well, what's best for the Waratahs is this. We're not going to follow what you say. Rubbish. Whereas, and vice versa, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
See, this is the other problem that you have, John, with this model is the one thing, and we've got it here in Western Australia, is that the force players, when they go back to play for their clubs, how does that work? There's been issues with that. Some players don't turn up to training. Some do. Some have really good attitudes. Then are they allowed to play in the finals? Then at the same time, the clubs are upset that their players don't get the chance in the force academies. So you really do need that crossover. You do need the force people to be on the board of the local thing, to be actually hearing what's going on, or in New South Wales, the Waratahs. And similarly, just going on to this, because coming up in November is the FFA board elections. And Frank Lowe is stepping down, and at the moment, his son Stephen is being groomed to take over as chairman. And the two other recommended board positions, again, have been recommendations from Frank Lowe.
That's Stephen, the Australian citizen, not the son that's the American citizen, isn't
that's
it?
Right.
Okay, just getting that correct.
But so the other two places on the board, again, have been recommended by Frank Lowy himself as well. Now, what I find scarier that's come out of all of this is the people who vote for the board are all the A-League chairmen and all of the chairmen of all of the state bodies in football in Western Australia. Now, do you know, in the 10 years that the FFA has existed, none of those people have put forward a single candidate for the FFA board?
Not one.
Not one.
Well, that explains why we play Bangladesh when Socceroos come to town.
But it also, to me, says John, you have no right as an A-League owner, as a state body, to complain about anything that the FFA
Absolutely.
Do, because you have done nothing to try and change that. You have an opportunity. You have a vehicle to get somebody who can speak for you on that board. And at the same time, and this comes all the way down, because I'd like to know how many of the state bodies chairman talk to their standing committees or talk to the stakeholders in the game to say, who do you want us to vote or how do you want us to vote? Because I don't think that comes down either. And that was the whole point of the Crawford report, was to give the stakeholders, the players, the referees, the coaches, the clubs, all a voice. And they were meant to go to the standing committees, who went to the board and said, this is what we want. And it's not happening. And I sort of shake my head, because no wonder Mr. Lowy and his family and all their cronies have managed to sit at the top table for so long, because none of the other people are prepared to stand up and say anything.
What does Stephen Lowy bring to the board, so to speak?
I don't know. All I've read is that he's his own man, according to his father.
To pluck some guy's name out of the blue like that, be it Lowy's son or anybody else, fine. He might be a very good business. What does he bring football-wise to the table that will allow him to make good footballing decisions?
I cannot comment.
Okay. We shan't. You got that lawyer's phone number?
Well,
This is Floyd Mayweather Sr., and you are now listening to the Not the Footy Show.
And just before we wrap up this podcast, I just want to say congratulations to Tamsin Cook, one of the West Australian Institute of Sport athletes, because she set a new championship record with a swim in the women's 4x200m freestyle relay, the Junior Swimming Championships being held in Singapore. The Australians won gold in 7 minutes 56.68, beating Canada and Russia, but she beat a record with her leg being 1 minute 58.16. So fantastic achievement by her.
Absolutely. And did you catch much of the World Athletics Championships while they've been on?
Oh, I caught a little bit of Usain Bolt and Gatlin. I mean, again, there's issues there. I don't know if you've been following the whole Lord Coe issue.
Not entirely. Is this over whether Gatlin should be running?
No, it's not. Well, he has been a big, obviously, advocate of getting rid of drugs in sport, but he is also an ambassador for Nike now, and it's a six-figure sum he gets paid to be an ambassador for Nike. Nike, of course, sponsor Justin Gatlin. They also are involved in Albert Salazar's Project Oregon program, which is under the microscope at the moment for accusations of performance-enhancing, what would you call it, methods. So he was asked whether he would step down now from his role as an ambassador for Nike. And he said in his opening speech or opening press conference as the president of the IAAF, no, he would not. The other thing is Nike are heavily embroiled in the FIFA scandal because it is believed that they paid massive bribes to get the sponsorship of Brazil. So it just feels, and everyone's saying that, you know, look, you've come in, you had a chance to make your mark. This first press conference, you really dropped the ball. And I have to say, I agree. I think if you are going to be the head of an international sporting body that has a lot of issues at the moment, you shouldn't have links to any sponsorship companies or anything. You need to be clean.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I have issues with Nike anyway and the amount of money that they pay superstars. I hope some of those people like Lord Coe, who I do have a little bit of respect for, will sit back and figure out how many days' work it is for a young lady in a sweatshop, how many days' work it would take for her to make the same amount of money that he makes just prancing around the world telling people Nike's good. I have a real problem with those sorts of issues in what sports sponsorship is. Goes through all the apparel companies as well. They all make serious, serious money off treating people like dirt. I don't like it.
Did you see, though, Bolt versus Gatlin as good versus evil, sinner against, you know?
Oh, I heard that. I heard someone say that, you know, this man saved our sport. A commentator, you know, talking about Bolt. I say, mate, if that is what you are relying on to save your sport, it's gone already.
Well, that's the thing. I think there was five or six sprinters in that 100 metres final have had drugs bans at some point in their career.
And we've talked about this before with what athletes are doing when it comes to doping now. We're not talking the good old days of East Germany and Russia where they were just pumping them as full as, you know, whatever they could get into them, as much as they could get into them. We're talking about far more sophisticated setups now where athletes are trying to get right to the limit of what they can take without stepping over the line. It's a completely different mindset to what's going on in the cheating world. We also know that they don't get tested while they're on a drug ban, so you can just juice yourself crazy.
Well, this is one of the things they were saying, that they should be drug tested anytime, any place, anywhere, and they only get tested now during competition windows.
If you've got a history of it, once you're convicted of it, you should stay in the testing regime through that 2 years. You've got to prove that you're clean throughout.
Before you're convicted, you should be having to do that. You know, I thought I don't know if you watched the last leg with Adam Hills, and one of the guys on that said, look, they were talking about this very issue, and he said, look, I reckon, just let them take them. He said, they're all trying to push to go as fast as they can. He goes, it'll be interesting, he said, because at some point someone's going to break. He goes, when you're trying to go that fast, you're going to fall over and have one major because your legs aren't going to be able to go so fast. But
what will happen is someone will have their heart will explode on the track.
Yeah.
And we've seen it happen with basketballers who've had cocaine addictions and what that can do to your body. And the same thing will happen to these athletes. I mean, we know already how high strung they are as far as their body goes. And, you know, they're so finely tuned, a little bit goes out and it throws them all wonky. You start adding chemicals to that equation and, yeah, whatever. Good luck.
Exactly. Well, that's probably it for this podcast. We hope you'll join us again and we hope you'll tell your friends about it. We've had really good listenership figures so far, so you're obviously enjoying them. And we'll keep bringing them to you as long as you are enjoying them. Just a reminder, streaming game at Nashfield, Saturday, 3 o'clock.
Some people are on the pitch, they think it's all over. It is
foul. See ya. We'll be back next week.